radio, so he'll be happy with that. Alison, we'll talk next time when we've a bit more time. The news is on its way. We've got to go, but I'm sending lots of love to both of you.
The other thing that I just wanted to say, that since we spoke to you, we've been made ambassadors of Alzheimer's Research UK, which is just fantastic. So we're carrying on the work.
Hang on, I'm going to come back and talk to you at the other side of the news. Just bear with me about that. I want to talk to you about that. We can't stop for the news. Hang on one sec. We'll be back with you very shortly. Cheers. Back with Alison and Clark.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yes, as Tony said, we will be back with Alison and Frank, but let me give you the latest headlines. Mohamed Al-Fayed was a monster whose behaviour was enabled by Harrods, the department store he owned. That's the claim from lawyers who represent some of the 37 women who've accused him of rape and sexual assault. The billionaire died last year, aged 94, and Harrods says it's now a very different company. Our correspondent Azadeh Moshiri has more.
The current owners and Harrods say they're utterly appalled by the allegations, that they apologise to the victims, and that they've set up a process that can quickly settle claims for the women should they want to avoid a lengthy legal process.
Mohamed Al-Fayed also owned Fulham Football Club between 1997 and 2013. It's investigating whether any women were abused there. Israel has carried out what it calls a targeted airstrike on the Lebanese capital, Beirut. 9 people have reported dead, including a senior Hezbollah commander. Almost 60 people were injured. Strikes have increased in recent days after pagers and walkie-talkies used by Hezbollah were blown up. Israel has been blamed but hasn't commented. The police watchdog has apologised for what has been described as abhorrent, degrading and cruel letters it sent to bereaved families and survivors of the Hillsborough disaster. The IOPC says it's extremely sorry for any distress the letters had caused. Val Yates survived the disaster and received one of the letters that she's been speaking to Drive.
They told me that there was no evidence that I'd seen a dead body. I don't know why they brought that into it, because they were scattered all over the pitch. It was one of the most traumatic things I've seen in my entire life. And to tell me that I didn't see it, because there's no evidence to support it, it's just like rubbishing my experiences.
There's been a small rise in the number of people in jail 10 days after around 1,700 prisoners were released early to ease overcrowding. The population of prisons in England and Wales has since gone up by 73, though jails are still below capacity. Nigel Farage has described the last 5 years of government in the UK as a complete breach of trust with the British public. The Reform UK leader has been speaking at the opening of his party's conference in Birmingham and says it's growing up.
We had the teenage tantrums, which were those that caused us harm in the general election. But we're now at a different point. The party is an adult. And this weekend is when Reform UK comes of age.
And how about this? 10 new Welsh words have been added to the Oxford English Dictionary. They include how to say cheers, the words for granny and grandpa, and the word for chips. How is your Welsh, Tony?
Not good. What is the Welsh for chips?
I don't know.
Oh, you've just...
I've just asked. Ask me.
You see, very fine when you need them.
Shoujo, you can help us out here.
No chance.
No. I kind of jumped in for you there, but I didn't think you'd know.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, look, someone will know the Welsh word for chips.
Please.
Well, of course they will. Yeah.
Somebody out there.
Let us know.
In Wales, 85058.
Anyway. Yeah, or out of Wales. There's plenty of Welsh speakers around. Not me. The Manchester City manager, Pep Guardiola, says any changes regarding football's increasing fixture demands must be led by the players. City midfielder Rodri said this week that footballers are close to going on strike in protest at the number of games in the calendar. Guardiola says if something's going to change, it must come from the players. The Surrey head coach, Gareth Batty, says winning the county championship title for a third consecutive year is a fitting way to mark the end of Alex Stewart's tenure as the director of cricket at the Oval. Surrey have become the first team since Yorkshire in the 1960s to win the championship for 3 years in a row. And after lapping quickest in second practice at the Singapore Grand Prix today, McLaren's Lando Norris says the F1 driver's title is for Max Verstappen to lose, not for me. I'm still the one who has nothing to lose. Norris is 59 points behind Verstappen with 7 races to go and 206 points still to play for.
In the latest travel news, in West Yorkshire, the M62 westbound one lane is closed between junction 24 at Ainley Top and 23. There's been an accident there. You have got queuing traffic as you approach the closure. In Worcestershire, the M42 southbound, two lanes are closed between junction 3 at Redditch to junction 2 at the Hotwood Park services. There's been an accident there. Congestion back to the M40 interchange currently. And Cambridgeshire, the A1M northbound, all traffic is temporarily being held between junction 16 at Norman Cross to 17. That's because of an accident. Traffic starting to look very, very heavy as it backs up there. Ellie Brennan, 5 Live Travel.
Ellie, thanks very much indeed. Let's say another quick hello to Alison, who rejoins us. Alison, hello.
Hello there. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
We wouldn't cut you off in your prime. Just quickly, and tell us you're now ambassadors for what and whom and what you're up to.
We're ambassadors for Alzheimer's Research UK, which is a leading charity that's working very hard towards supporting research to find a cure for all of the diseases that cause dementia. Tomorrow is World Alzheimer's Day, and it's also Frank's 80th birthday tomorrow.
Oh.
Special day, you know, for all sorts of reasons.
Oh, well, look, we're so pleased you've come on. Frank, have a great day tomorrow.
Thank you very much. I'll do my very best.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Brilliant. Frank and Alison, lots of love. Speak to you soon.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Two of the loveliest people, Jeanette, who've ever been, well, certainly in the 10 years I've been doing Drive. Absolutely fantastic. Happy 80th to Frank. Right,
Lovely.
5:05.
On BBC iPlayer.
You know what happens when you open a can of worms?
He's killed my brother.
So naturally you're friends with him online.
Some things are better laid to rest.
He's served a sentence while I keep serving mine.
Dead and Buried. Watch on BBC iPlayer.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Drive.
Thanks for being with us. Our top story this evening.
We will say it plainly. Mohammed Al-Fayed was a monster. But he was a monster enabled by a system. A system that pervaded Harrods.
Well, that is one of the lawyers representing former Harrods employees who are accusing Mohammed Al-Fayed of rape, sexual assault and physical violence over a 25-year period. During a press conference this morning, Dean Armstrong KC said the case combined some of the most horrific elements of those involving Jimmy Savile, Jeffrey Epstein and Harvey Weinstein.
Savile, because in this case, as in that, the institution, we say, knew about the behaviour. Epstein, because in that case, as in this, there was a procurement system in place to source the women and girls, as you know, there are some very young victims of this, for abuse. And Weinstein, because it was a person at the very top of the organisation who was abusing his power.
More than 100 women have now contacted lawyers accusing Mohammed Al-Fayed of sexual assault after the BBC investigation. Another of the lawyers who spoke at this morning's conference was Gloria Allred, who has previously represented people who'd been abused by Jeffrey Epstein and Harvey Weinstein. And we can talk to her now. Gloria, thank you so much for joining us on the show this evening.
Thank you for inviting me.
When we look at Harrods and their liability in this particular case, what's your view on it, given it has changed owners since?
Well, as I said at the press conference, it's never too late to do the right thing. And the current owners purchased Harrods in 2010, and their statement to the BBC documentary appears to suggest that they were unaware of this history of sexual abuse. But in the documentary, of course, it is alleged to the contrary that Al-Fayed was not secret about what he was doing. He tried to keep it a secret, but it was widely known by many of his employees. So perhaps the new owners were blinded by the billions that they hoped to make when they purchased Harrods, or perhaps they just wanted to buy a piece of British history. Either way, we feel that we're happy that they've acknowledged that Harrods failed the victims. But, you know, I believe in deeds, not words. So we think it's important that there be as much justice as possible for the victims, and that would include financial compensation to them by Harrods. The reason that's important is because many of them have bills that they've had to pay, even though they really couldn't afford it, to see doctors, medical doctors, to, you know, hire therapists. And many of them suffered lost wages when they resisted the sexual advances of Muhammad Al-Fayed, because then he retaliated against them by terminating them. So there they were without a job. So that is a form of justice if we can win, that is, the victims can win accountability and some justice, because, you know, receiving compensation means that Harrods is doing some meaningful justice in that way, you know, to resolve a civil claim. And I just commend the many survivors, the many victims that have retained the barristers as a legal team. And they've, you know, as I, again, the point, courage is contagious. And so now we see many more contacting Dean and one of the barristers, and Bruce and Maria, our legal team, and they would like to have justice too. We don't know what the ultimate number will be.
But I think we're on 37 at the moment.
Could be in the hundreds.
So it's interesting that you mentioned, of course, the King's Counsel there. Dean Armstrong, just in the clip that we played in the intro there, has likened this and says that it's elements of some of the most horrific cases he's seen. Jimmy Savile, Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein. In your opinion, for someone who's been doing this for a significant amount of time, how does this case compare to other high-profile serial abusers?
Well, I agree. You know, I did represent 20 victims of Jeffrey Epstein. And both in the criminal case that had been filed and was being prosecuted against Jeffrey Epstein before his death, the price was their homicide, depending on what you believe, but while he was in custody and prior to his actually facing trial. So, yes, I Jeffrey Epstein was groomed these young women he was with, some of them underage, many of them not, and he made promises, for example, to pay for their education. And, of course, all that came with a price for the victims, that they had to engage, you know, in sexual acts with Jeffrey Epstein. And so he wasn't doing this out of the goodness of his heart. He was doing it because he wanted sexual pleasure and sexual gratification from these victims. So likewise, Muhammad Al-Fayed did all of this, you know, developed his plan, his scheme, his design to target vulnerable victims like those who would work for the chairman, Muhammad, at Harrods. So he knew they needed their jobs. He knew they had to pay their bills. And he was counting on the fact that they would keep it secret. But I'm glad they spoke truth to power, some of them today, some of them for the documentary. And that's how we win change.
A lot of these women are speaking about the fact that, you know, they were targeted because they were vulnerable. But what I'm interested to learn here, Gloria, is why the abuse is allowed to happen for so long within an organisation and an establishment, if you like. Why is that allowed to happen for such a long, prolonged period of time?
Well, that's a great question. I think part of the answer is he terrified them, he threatened them, he intimidated the victims, they were afraid to come forward. Also, they didn't know their rights. Maybe they didn't know that they could go to a lawyer to have a confidential conversation about this. Maybe they thought if they did, they wouldn't be able to afford the lawyer if they had to charge. And so there are all kinds of possibilities. But look, better late than never. And I'm just proud of them. They're coming forth now. And I always say, in unity, there's strength. So more and more victims come forward, and if we assess their case, to proceed to vindicate their rights, that's what we're going to do.
How much is this changing over the years when you're looking at cases that you've done maybe 20, 30 years ago to present day? How much of the victims or the survivors, if you like, how much has that changed over time?
Well, we used to hear about sexual predators preying on victims, and that was always bad news. And sometimes we didn't hear from the victims. But now that they're willing to many of them, not all, speak publicly than, you know, speaking their truth to power publicly. I think that this is a good change, that women are finding the courage to assert their rights and vindicate their rights. And that encourages others as well, perhaps in other countries around the world, perhaps, you know, in the UK, United States, elsewhere, that people will see this, victims, and they will say, oh, they can do it, so can I. And so breaking the silence is very important. And of course, providing consequences for the wrongdoers is also very important. I mean, that's a teaching moment. You're not getting away with it, is what it teaches. So I know that Mr. Mohammed Al-Fayed valued his reputation. He valued his legacy. And now he had really nobody to blame but himself for what he did in sexually abusing, raping, attempting to rape, battering, involving himself in the sexual battery of women. No excuse for that, no justification for that, and nobody should have had to suffer being in some kind of abusive relationship with Mohammed Al-Fayed just in order to get a job or keep a job. And so most women really fought back and didn't want it. Some of them didn't have the ability to fight back, emotional strength to do it, and they just were afraid. And that, of course, is what predators always want. They always want their victims to be afraid of telling anybody, afraid of seeking justice, because they know that once that happens, you can be, the victim can be very disappointed if she doesn't speak out. But on the other hand, she also can win just some form of justice if she does. So we're just proud of our client.
You almost need these organisations and establishments then, I guess, to empower their employees if they feel that something like this has happened. Another football club, Fulham Football Club, that Mohammed Al-Fayed did own, they've been quite proactive and said that they are looking to hear any accounts of anything that went on whilst he was the owner of the club. Do we need to see more organisations take that kind of approach when it comes down to situations and cases like this?
Well, let me just say that, I'm acting as an expert, acting as a consultant to the barristers in this case, who I think are, by the way, were very excellent barristers and very articulate, very bright, and very experienced. But, having said that, all of this can be very hard on victims. But this can be resolved, and it should be resolved sooner than later. Because as we say, justice delayed is justice denied. And these victims have been suffering for a long time, and it's long overdue for them to win some justice. So that's what we're dedicated to, because we care about these victims, and because they deserve justice.
Okay, well, Gloria, thank you, as always, for coming on and joining us here on Drive. That's Gloria Allred there, US attorney working on the Mohammed Al-Fayed case. Now, we have a statement here from Harrods that I must read to you. Harrods has acknowledged that whilst it was owned by Fayed as a business, we failed our employees who were his victims, and we sincerely apologise. The Harrods of today is very different as an organisation to the one owned and controlled by Al-Fayed between 1985 and 2010. Department stores owners, new owners, have a compensation scheme for ex-employees who say they were attacked by Fayed, which is separate to the legal action being taken by some accusers. Harrods has already reached financial settlements with the majority of the people who have approached them since 2023 and has had new inquiries this week. That's a statement there from Harrods. And as a reminder, you can watch Al-Fayed Predator at Harrods on BBC iPlayer now. That is the documentary, the BBC investigative documentary there, and you can also listen to World of Secrets Season 4 Al-Fayed Predator at Harrods. That's a podcast on BBC Sounds. It is 19 minutes past 5.
We're going to bring you more on that after 6 as well. We'll find out just how long people have been investigating those allegations against Mohammed Al-Fayed. We'll also bring you the latest from Beirut, the news today is that 8 people are reported to have been killed in an Israeli airstrike which targeted a senior Hezbollah leader. We'll find out how Nigel Farage's leader's speech gone down with the party faithful at Reform UK's annual conference. Plus, in the last few moments, while we're on the subject of politics, there's been a political storm certainly over the past few days about donations made to Keir Starmer and the Labour Party, particularly from Lord Waheed Ali. Clothes and glasses he's donated to the Labour leader. In the past few moments, Downing Street have said that Keir Starmer, Angela Rayner and Rachel Reeves, that's the Prime Minister, Deputy Prime Minister and Chancellor, will not accept any donations for clothing in future. So confirmation from Downing Street that no more clothes will be accepted by Keir Starmer, Angela Rayner and Rachel Reeves.
And after 6, you'll be hearing from Lennox Lewis. He's previewing tomorrow's world heavyweight title fight between the current IBF champion Daniel Dubois and Anthony Joshua. It's all British fight. And a piece of breaking news for you. We just had it confirmed. We're going to be bringing you exclusive audio commentary of that fight here on 5 Live. Oh, it's so exciting. And the best of the undercard, of course, from 8.30 and the earlier fights from 7.30 on 5 Sports Extra.
That's big news here, the Joshua fight here on 5 Live. Brilliant. Also, we've been talking about the power of playlists and how particular songs can help people with dementia to retrieve memories. We heard from Frank and Alison and Bruce Hornsby a few moments ago. Kieran in Glasgow got in touch requesting this.
They go round and round and the planes and ponies go up and down. We're captive on the carousel.
Joni Mitchell and the Circle Game. So Kieran requested that for his Uncle Frank. We're pleased to help. So we've said we'll play any music today on the show that's helped your family in one way or another. And helping you out, Jeanette, because unbelievably you didn't know the Welsh for chips.
Sorry, everybody.
I've seen it now and I still can't pronounce it.
Had it. What is it?
It's loads of Sklodian.
Sklodian, no.
I think. So Brian and Abigail. Well, so many people sending that in. Fish and chips is Saigod and Sklodian.
Yeah.
That's fish and chips in Welsh. So good.
I don't know if you pronounced that correctly. Can somebody send us a voice note, please? 0808-599-693.
Charming. Doubting my abilities.
Sorry.
No, you're quite right to do that. Nick in Kingston. Loads of people send that pronunciation in, but quite rightly, Jeanette points out, we still don't know how to say it. So, yeah, send us a voice note, 0808-599-693. Right. We still got to hear why you're seeing Lennox Lewis, but we'll find out later on. It's 21 minutes past 5 now.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
We need somebody to look after our economy.
It's the biggest issue in Scotland at the moment.
Wherever you are in the UK, you're part of this with us on this network. 5 Live Drive.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
There's been some brilliant Champions League commentaries on 5 Live this week. Premier League is back centre stage again. We're going to have a look at some of the big matches we've got this week, and particularly commentary matches here on 5 Live. We've got the big one on Sunday. It's fact of the day as well. Our football correspondent, John Murray, joins us. Hello, John.
Hello, Tony.
You've had a busy week. You sound as though you're out and about now.
No, I'm at my desk, actually, as I'm talking to you.
You've got a desk, everybody?
Yes.
Have you?
Yeah.
Is that your home office?
Well, you could call it that if you wanted to call it that, yeah.
I've always imagined, when I speak to you, I always imagine where you are, and now I know.
Yeah, I've got the football yearbook sitting on my desk.
Have you? Oh,
copies
cheating.
Of World Soccer.
Cheating for fact of the day, all right.
It'll remain firmly shut.
You've outed
yourself. I've had a quiet week compared to the others.
Who've
been here, there and everywhere.
Absolutely.
I was just at Manchester City the other night.
Of course you were.
It was a short
hop
for me.
You were home, weren't you? Yeah. And that was a disappointing 0-0 draw, really, John.
It was, yeah.
To say the least.
It was because, and listen, the Inter played very well, you know, in the way that they do, because they're a well-organised team. They won the Italian League by an absolute distance last season, and they carried a thread, and I felt Manchester City didn't have their normal zip, whether that was down to City or whether that was down to the way that Inter played. You know, it's probably a little bit of both, but I think it was actually, for City, very good preparation for this match against Arsenal on Sunday, because I wouldn't be at all surprised if it was a similar sort of match.
Yeah, well, just before we get there, honorary mentions for Celtic, Liverpool and Villa, who did really well in the Champions League midweek.
Yeah, you know, obviously adrenaline was running for Aston Villa coming back into the into this competition for the first time since the early 80s, and what a start that was for them. And I know I'm very much looking forward to their next match, which is the home game against Bayern Munich. And remember when they won the European Cup, as it was, it was Bayern Munich that they beat in the final. So that's the next match at Villa Park. And I'm going to be there for that. And I'm really looking forward to that. And obviously for Celtic, such a boost that was. As we learned the other night, that first time that they've won their opening match in the Champions League and against Slovan Bratislava, it was so important for them to do that with the run of matches that they've got. So, I think we're still getting our heads around what it is going to look like, this single league Champions League group stage this season. And
I quite like it on early doors, I must admit. But it remains to be seen later on in the season, if, as we've discussed all along, is whether there are a load of dead rubbers, but hopefully.
Well, and I'm slightly influenced by the fact that it did really feel the other night at Manchester City that there was a lack of edge there, both on the pitch and in the stands. And I think a part of that is that everyone going to that match would think, well, Manchester City, Inter, the Italian champion, these are two teams that will find a way through into the knockout stages, probably into the last 16, and you know, probably high up in that table. So we'll see how it settles down and how it pans out over the course of the coming months.
Yeah, let's turn to domestic matters then. So we've got four commentaries here on Five Live. We have got the big one, and you've referenced it already on Sunday. I'm just trying to see who's at home. I forgot. Manchester City against Arsenal. Yeah, big game.
Yeah, and we know that these are the teams that finished in the top two in the Premier League in each of the last two seasons. We know that that's where they are right now, with City 4 wins out of 4 in the Premier League and Arsenal 2 points behind them. And we know that Arsenal, you know, had to play in Italy against Atalanta last night, so a day later, and also away from home, whether that will be a factor. But I think from what we've seen already in the Premier League, again, they do look the two best teams. They've both made roaring starts to the season. And Arsenal in particular, I would say, with the fixture schedule that they've been handed out at the start of this season, to come through that as they have done, unbeaten, and have conceded just one goal in the 5 matches that they've played, and now to have to go away again, and they've already won at Aston Villa and Tottenham this season, Arsenal, you know, this is the ultimate test, to go away to Manchester City. And last time they played each other there last season, we know what happened, Tony. It finished
0-0. Yes, exactly. Well, we hope for goals.
And if you remember, in the aftermath of that match, which was at the end of March, so getting towards the end of the season, it was felt that that was an excellent result for Arsenal, whereas I think Manchester City kind of intimated at the time that maybe Arsenal should have gone for it. And perhaps, even with hindsight, you would say maybe they should have done, because in the end, Manchester City won the title.
Yeah, going for it at Manchester City. I remember when Burnley scored first once, and they beat us 5-1 instead of 5-0. So.
Listen, the template, I think, is what Arsenal did last season, what Inter did on Wednesday, what Real Madrid actually did in the Champions League last season when they knocked Manchester City out there, is, you know, everything has got to be right. There's got to be a game plan. There's got to be a threat on the break. And in the end, the defence has to be at its absolute best. And Arsenal, that is the thing. Arsenal are coming into this match on Sunday with their defence in prime form.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that. It's our 4:30 commentary on Sunday. At 2 o'clock, we've got Brighton against Nottingham Forest, which is really intriguing because Forest are doing okay.
They are. And Brighton have made an excellent start under their young new coach as well. And actually, they're the only team that have taken points off Arsenal in the Premier League this season, with the 1-1 draw that they got at the Emirates Stadium when Declan Rice was sent off that day. So I've not seen them in the flesh, actually. I've seen them on the television, but I've not seen them on the flesh. Brighton and Nottingham Forest with that win last weekend at Anfield. What a win that was. As Ian Dowd, I don't know whether you heard Ian Dennis make mention of the fact that was Nottingham Forest's first win at Anfield since before man set foot on the moon.
Yes. He used that fact on this show last week, John, to make my fact seem really ordinary. Yeah, that blew me away. I wish I'd known that. That was this is a good fact, though, isn't it? That
it is. Out of the top drawer.
Yeah, top drawer. He's learning his deno as he goes along. Palace Man United tea time tomorrow. Another intriguing game.
Yes, Manchester United, having had a whopping win against Barnsley, And also a very good win at Southampton last weekend, where if Cameron Archer had scored his penalty, which was saved, if that had gone in, I would have been very intrigued to see which way that match would have gone. As it turned out, after the penalty miss, Southampton went one way and Manchester United went the other. But it still has that feel, despite the week that they've had, that they're only one match away from a potential crisis.
Yes,
Manchester United.
That's why they're always interesting. It's a soap opera, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the only thing I don't know is where Deno is tomorrow, John, where his base is.
He's been in Italy all week, and he is now on his way to Anfield again, so he's going to be back at Anfield with Chris Sutton again as well. Who they were at Anfield last Saturday afternoon, so it's the Liverpool-Bournemouth game is our main 3 o'clock commentary tomorrow afternoon.
Brilliant. Well, talking of Deno, shall we hear how he performed last... Well, he won. My record's shocking, in fact, of the day this season. So here he is.
You're doing an Everton.
Yeah, I am doing Everton. Here he is, squeezing in his... But there is controversy here. I'm going to play it and then we'll discuss the controversy. Here we go.
Liverpool are in all red. Nottingham Forest, naturally to avoid a colour clash, are in their change strip. Not the Garibaldi red, named after the famous Italian. That was fact of the day with Tony Livesey. You can hear that each Friday afternoon at 5:20. But instead, it's a sky blue shirt and white shorts.
There's a big clue there that was before the match started. So, John... do you know what that is, you guys? Because 5 out of 5 now have been given not while the match... That's the referee starting the game.
Yeah,
I just thought I'd remind you.
Yeah.
5 out of 5 facts have been delivered outside of play.
Is that right?
It is right.
Well,
I think it is. Someone told me. I haven't checked, but
The players seem to be bending the rules.
Yeah.
So who's got to clamp down on that?
Well, I suppose. But
the referee.
I don't know what to do about it. But just, wait for the whistle.
Stronger refereeing.
Listen, let's play the theme tune.
He's opened a Pandora's box.
Yes. I have, yes. Right, John, here we go. So, you are doing the big match on Sunday. Manchester City against Arsenal, is that correct?
It is correct, yes.
I forgot to get my book out, so I'll fill while I'm getting it.
Okay. Tony, I am covering that.
Yeah, thank you. Rodri is in the news, of course, because he was saying, there might be a strike. Really interesting fellow, Rodri, by the way. Have you ever interviewed him, John?
I have, and he is a very engaging character.
Yeah, he sounds as though he's really switched on. I like the cut of his jib. Anyway, he was a chess prodigy as a child. Did you know that?
I did not know that. You'll be delighted to hear.
Good, but I wish I'd put that as my fact now. But anyway, but he says that it comes in handy because when Pep's explaining tactics to him, he'll often move objects like chess pieces to explain them.
Okay.
But what is Pep's object of choice to move when explaining tactics to Rodri? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what we try to do, at very, very great expense, is recreate the noise these objects make. So we'll just dip the theme tune a bit, John.
Okay.
So is it this? Does he move salt and pepper pots?
Uh-huh.
Is it this? Does he move coffee cups? Uh-huh. Or is it C? Something I'm calling... they're stunt noises, by the way, so don't read anything into them. Various condiments, so he'll move whatever's to hand when he's talking to Rodri. So is it... or that? Which do you think it is?
Various condiments seems to be very close to salt and pepper.
Well, no, it's kind of an all-inclusive. It could be ketchup.
Mustard.
Could be mayonnaise. What's that lovely little stuff people drizzle on salads? What is it?
Balsamic vinegar.
It could be olive oil.
Yeah.
Yes.
They've probably got a lot of that at Manchester City.
do you think they do or don't?
Well, I'm sure they're very healthy. That's why I'm saying that they've got... I'm going to go for... I don't think coffee cups. Salt and pepper's the one that people always talk about. So I'm going to go for various condiments. I'm going to say Rodri suggested
various condiments. The answer is... coffee cups.
Coffee cups. That was the outsider for me.
I think it's a massive insight into Pep's life. He uses. I was trying to think of other things we could try and throw into the mix, like paper clips. But someone said nobody uses them anymore. I thought, I don't know.
Do they not?
Just a discussion point.
Yeah.
I bet there's some on your little home office desk.
I've got some in the drawer. Get them out
just for special effects.
Yeah,
they are. He's got some.
Listen.
Yeah, there we go, you see. And if Pep had them, it'd be pepper clips. I wanted to use that, but they wouldn't let me. John, you're wrong, so I've won for the first time this season.
Congratulations, Tony.
I look forward to hearing it squeezed coffee into your cups. Commentary on Pep. But yeah. It's interesting insight. Pep uses coffee cups to explain tactics
I've
to Rodri.
I've got Leon Osman with me for the match. He'll love that one, Leon. So Leon will buy into
He's
that,
old
I'm
school.
Sure.
He said that on the radio last night, yeah, when he was talking to Chappers. So yeah, that's probably how they did it in the old days.
He's probably a mug man, isn't he?
He probably had him hurled at his head a few times.
Probably.
Old Leon. Right, John, I'm going to let you go back to your office desk.
Thank you.
Watch the rest of the chase.
Thanks, Tom.
I'll speak
I'm
to you.
Working hard.
Yeah, no, I know.
Television on.
I'll speak to you anon.
Yes, goodbye to you both.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, there he goes. That's John Murray. Good, I've won one. Brilliant.
Well done.
Are you impressed with that, do you know?
I'm impressed with that, actually. Well done.
I'm waiting for your Lennox Lewis fact of the day. Oh, we've interviewed Lennox. He's coming on after six, and Jeanette's going to let us know what she's up to with him tomorrow. Monday. Okay, right. It is Drive on 5 Live 534.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And these are the headlines. A lawyer for women who've accused Mohamed Al-Fayed of rape and sexual assault has told Drive that Harrods has a duty to compensate them. Gloria Allred says many were sacked when they resisted the former owner of the department store. The company says it now has a very different working culture. Nine people have been killed and dozens injured in Israeli strike on a Lebanese capital, Beirut. Israel says it killed Hezbollah's operations commander along with other senior members of the group. Downing Street has confirmed that Keir Starmer, Angela Rayner and Rachel Reeves won't accept any donations for clothing in the future. It follows criticism of the Prime Minister after he accepted clothes from Labour peer Lord Ali. And Nigel Farage says Reform UK can win the next general election. He told the party conference in Birmingham that the Conservative brand is bust and people won't return to them, and says Sir Keir Starmer has had a dreadful start as PM. Shoto has your sport for you.
Thank you, Jeanette. The new Women's Super League season kicks off tonight with the champions Chelsea hosting Aston Villa. Chelsea beat Manchester City to the title on goal difference last season. Over the summer, City have added the Dutch striker Vivian Miedema to their squad, and the former Chelsea goalkeeper Siobhan Chamberlain reckons that could help City go one better this time.
They lost it last year because Bunny Shaw got injured at the end and they didn't have anybody else that was necessarily going to score them those goals. So now bringing in Miedema to add to that goal scoring ability, if you've got both of those two players on the pitch at one point in time, they're a pretty frightening outfit to go up against.
Well, Manchester City women start their WSL season away at Arsenal on Sunday. Tonight, you can watch Chelsea versus Aston Villa, the first game, on BBC Two from 6:45. The Bayern Munich head coach Vincent Kompany's called for an annual cap on the number of games a player can play amid concerns over workload. Kompany's comments follow a claim from Manchester City midfielder Rodri that players are close to going on strike in protest at the increase in European fixtures and the expansion of the FIFA Club World Cup. Tottenham boss Ange Postecoglou was among several Premier League managers to be on media duty today ahead of their matches at the weekend. Tottenham play Brentford tomorrow. It was put to Postecoglou that he is the first Spurs manager in half a decade to last at the club for an entire season.
Yeah, they had a cake for me the other day. Look, it's not difficult for me because that's how I've always worked. I keep saying, I know I'm not going to be here forever, but I work like I will be, and I make changes that I think are going to set the club up for success for a sustainable period. So every decision I make is along with, you know, that backdrop.
At the PGA Championship at Wentworth, they're all trying to catch Englishman Matthew Baldwin at the top of the leaderboard. Our golf correspondent Ian Carter is watching the second round.
And the closest rivals are three shots behind, the 38-year-old from Southport, who was round in 66 earlier today, a former delivery driver, as he had a punctuation in his golfing career, really enjoying a fantastic first 2 days here to move to 13 under par. Antoine Rosner of France at 10 under par, Nicholas Norgaard with two holes to play, both at 10 under par. Rory McIlroy is six shots off the pace. He's in a share of sixth place at 7 under par, with four holes to play alongside Tommy Fleetwood, who was round in 68 today.
Ian, thank you. Surrey's third successive Vitality County Championship title was confirmed today after rivals Somerset were beaten by 168 runs by Lancashire at Old Trafford. It means that Surrey become the first county since the 1960s to win three consecutive championships. Head coach Gareth Batty says there is a brilliant atmosphere at the club at the moment.
It's credit to what everybody at the Oval is creating. There's a wonderful feel about the place. it's a real drive for people to be better and be part of something that's just a little bit bigger than an individual. And long may that continue, because it's impressive that some superstar England players want to come back and play for us whenever they get a chance.
And in Formula One, McLaren's Lando Norris was fastest in second practice at the Singapore Grand Prix, with the two Ferraris of Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz lapping second and third quickest, respectively. That is the latest from BBC Sport. Remember, you can listen at any time on your smart speaker by saying play BBC Sports News.
In the latest travel news, in Lancashire, the M61 northbound, two lanes are closed between Junction 8 at Chorley and Junction 9. Worcestershire, the M42 southbound, one lane is closed between Junction 3 at Redditch and the Hotwood Park services around Junction 2. Congestion there is back to the M40 interchange at the moment. Cambridgeshire, the A1M northbound, that is closed at Junction 17 at the Peterborough turning. There's been an accident there, traffic starting to queue and look really slow. And the M25, clockwise, there was a broken down lorry before Junction 23 around South Mimms. Congestion there is back to Junction 22, but all lanes are back open. Ellie Brennan, Five Live Travel.
Welcome to the Tooney and Russo Show on BBC Sounds. I am here with two of football's most famous friends, Alessia Russo and Ella Toon.
Remember when you scored and you did like five different celebrations?
Yeah, I did all sorts. Hands went up, hands went out, I jumped.
So awkward.
Someone's given them to a podcast. Are you joking?
It was like the best 3 years ever. I think I came back a bit Americanized.
Yeah, she did.
She started saying these mad words.
Soccer. They'd like have this like American accent. They've been there a month.
The Tooney and Russo Show with me, Vic Hunt. Listen on BBC Sounds.
The voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Drive.
It is Five Live Drive with Tony Livesey and Jeanette Kouachi. It is 20-6. Now, officials in Lebanon say at least 9 people are known to have died in an Israeli airstrike on the capital, Beirut, with almost 60 injured. The Israeli military also says it has killed a top Hezbollah commander in the strike. Ibrahim Akil of the group's elite Radwan unit had been wanted by the US in connection with 2 attacks in Beirut in the mid-1980s that killed hundreds of Americans.
Well, earlier, Hezbollah fired more than 100 rockets into Israel. The militant group has blamed Israel for recent attacks involving pagers and walkie-talkies, which detonated, killing at least 30 people. Our next guest sent us this audio of the moment this latest strike happened.
Sara Ramal is a content creator who had to leave her village of Odeis in southern Lebanon. She's in the southern suburbs of Beirut now and joins us now. Sara, good evening. First of all, you did send us this audio. I just want to check that you are okay and what's happening where you are right now.
Yeah, I'm fine. I live in the same area that got bombed. I live in Dahiya, which is the southern suburbs of Beirut. It's the area that was mostly affected in the 2006 war, and it's where most people support the resistance. We heard the sound of the bombing. I didn't know what was happening because sometimes there are sonic booms, and we kind of got used to the sound. But it was like a bombing of a residential building where a lot of civilians were dead, including children. And even my friend lives in a building beside this one. So I've seen that building before. I've visited her. This is a reality we got used to, because we know that Israel will go for, will do anything to just get what they want. They can kill children, kill women, kill people living in their homes just to do what they want.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your story here, Sara? Because you're speaking about what you've seen, and you know you've had to move house. You've been really impacted by some of these airstrikes and some of the fighting. But we'd like to understand a little bit more about what's happened to you so far.
Okay, so I am from a village on the border with occupied Palestine. It's called Adaise. And on October 7, we all know that the genocide against Palestinians in Gaza started. The Lebanese resistance joined fighting Israel and targeting military infrastructure to make them to stop the genocide, because we all knew what would happen after October 7th. So on October 8th, the war started on the border. I used to listen to the bombs and see them like go like in the sky above me. My house is right on the border. It's beside a Lebanese-occupied village. It's called Hunin. It's one of the seven Lebanese-occupied villages by Israel. I used to see everything and hear everything. And because I was a content creator, and I used to share what was going on, especially after October 7, when a lot of people were just referring to my people as terrorists, just because they are fighting back years and years of oppression. I had to leave my village to go to university in Beirut because it wasn't safe anymore to stay in South Lebanon. And my parents stayed there. They moved just to a safer house. It's just my grandparents' house because it's not right on the border, but it was still in my village on the border. They had to leave, yeah.
No, I was going to ask you, in terms of, you're speaking about October the 7th and what that's been like for you and for your family, you having to move after that time, how has that made you feel, especially, you know, being away from your family?
It actually, like, it had a very big impact on my mental health, just because I wasn't able to be sure that my family is okay. Like, on the days I used to go and stay with them in South, I used to hear the bombs and see the bombs and film them and everything, and I was fine. But on the days I was in Beirut alone, I used to check the news every 5 minutes just to see if my family's names will be on some news platform that they were martyred or something. It was really, really bad. Like, right now I prefer to just stay with my parents if the war escalates here, just so I would know for sure that they are safe.
And for a lot of young people that are in your situation, you know, it almost feels quite hopeless in terms of when or how this might come to some sort of resolution. But what would you like to see happening now, Sarah?
I mean, there are a lot of options for like a ceasefire that Israel said no to, because Netanyahu doesn't want the war to stop. He just wants to take the land. That's all he cares about. I hope that people in the West just educate themselves on everything that's going on, not to take their information from one source, to see everything. Like, everything is being shared on the internet and in English just for people to know the truth, what is going on. I hope, like, they just educate themselves and know the impact they can do if they can pressure their governments to stop funding Israel, because it is a terrorist state and it is committing terrorism. But no one is talking about it. No one is saying that they are terrorists just because they are not Arab, and it's a word they only use against us.
How important do you feel that your content creation is now, Sarah, by maybe getting a message out that's, you know, on the ground for people to be able to see? Because you mentioned the fact that so many young people and people just generally where you are putting out their message via social media. How important is that?
I think it's really important, because a lot of people didn't know about what was actually going on or how people here live. Like, they thought, for example, I had people send me, like, they were very surprised that there are actual civilians in my village. They thought it's a military base, and it's fully civilians. Even the people who are fighting weren't fighting before. They were civilians. They are just fighting back to save their homes and they save their lands and save their families. I've made a lot of friends everywhere in the world. because now they understand more about what is actually going on, and they care about me, and they message me every time, like, they see that something is happening and I didn't post about it. And that means a lot for me, because I have a lot of hope of people who actually go search for the truth and not just take something from mainstream media and go with it. Especially people who maybe are privileged enough not to care mm-hmm. about what is happening around them in the world. But they do have an impact, and it's their responsibility, because their governments are the ones who are controlling everything.
Okay. Well, Sara, we appreciate you coming on to the show this evening. Thank you for your time. That is Sara Ramal. She's a content creator based now in the southern suburbs of Beirut after having to leave southern Lebanon. It is 5:49.
Yeah, we'll keep you updated on that story as the programme goes along. Still lots more to come on tonight's show. We've been promising you this for 2 days, actually. It's a great show on the telly tonight involving a married couple who we'll know on Drive as Brasso Dave and classy scrubber Rosemary. The TV show follows their epic efforts to restore a South Yorkshire stately home to its former glory. So we're going to meet them very shortly.
Yeah, and after six, we'll be talking about three huge sporting events this weekend. Daniel Dubois defending his IBF World Heavyweight title against Anthony Joshua at Wembley tomorrow night. And there'll be exclusive audio commentary of that here on Five Live. Coverage begins on the BBC Sport website with commentary of Josh Warrington's fight against Anthony Kakace. And then on to Five Sports Extra, and BBC Sounds from 7 p.m. will be switching to Five Live, and BBC Sounds from 8:30. We'll be previewing the new WSL season as well with the former Spurs captain, Jenna Scalacci, and she, Jenna Scalacci, and we're hearing, of course, from Sabutio World Cup too. Sabutio World Cup as Love part it. Of the three big
used
events.
Used to have all the gear I did as
it
a kid.
Did.
I used to have the TV gantry, the floodlights,
everything.
Right, loads to get involved with if you want to. 850-58. It's 10 to 6.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
5 Live Drive. Listen on BBC Sounds.
So, Reform UK began its party conference in Birmingham earlier, with all five of Reform's MPs taking to the podium. They were greeted by crowds of supporters. They were chanting, "Let's make Britain great," baseball caps, reminiscent of a Trump rally in the US. Here's what Nigel Farage had to say.
I looked at the fact that, frankly, without massive public borrowing, there would have been no growth in our economy for year after year after year. An NHS in which you can't get a GP appointment, roads that are clogged beyond comprehension. And frankly, I thought to myself, Britain is broken. And then I couldn't help it. But if Britain is broken, then logically, Britain needs reform.
Well, their now deputy leader, Richard Tice, also spoke to Matt Chorley on Five Live earlier. You can listen back to that on BBC Sounds. Our political correspondent, Hannah Miller, is with us. Hannah, good evening. Nigel Farage, Reform UK, what have we heard in terms of actual policy here?
Hi, Jeanette. Yeah, I think one of the things that's been interesting is there's been relatively little actual policy in this conference so far, but very much more it's about kind of the party structures. Now, a lot of people listening to this might think, my goodness, that's boring. I don't really care how a party's structured. But what Nigel Farage is really saying is that this is about professionalising it, making it look more like a political party and less like a business. At the moment, he owns 60% of the shares in Reform UK. He said that's because it was good for decision making. He wanted to be able to get things off the ground quickly. But now he says the party is coming of age. He's made the comparison with the Liberal Democrats, who got fewer votes than Reform UK in the general election, but more seats in Parliament. And essentially the argument is that if you want to be winning seats in Parliament and really winning power, then you need to have a ground game. You need to have campaigners in constituencies, constituency organisations from the bottom up. And so what this conference is trying to do is to get members more involved, suggest that they're going to have a say in party policies, in the way that the party is run. And in a sense, that is quite a shift for reform rather than going from this thing that Nigel Farage owns and has essential control of to something that is more owned by the membership.
I mean, he's drawing a lot of criticism at the moment because he actually hasn't held a surgery in his constituency of Clacton, has he?
Yeah, and he's been out to the US. He's obviously still doing things on GB News. There are people questioning whether he should be doing quite so many other things. But Nigel Farage will always take those criticisms and kind of say that he's been voted in by his constituents and he'll, you know, represent them and the values that they stand for. He kind of doesn't give a huge amount of time to those types of criticisms. He acknowledges that he's probably one of the most criticised politicians and then sort of says, hey, well, people are voting for me anyway.
OK, well, Hannah, thank you. As always, Hannah Miller there, our political correspondent, just giving us a bit of a recap off the back of Reform UK Party Conference. It is 5:54.
It is. It's a busy day on Drive. There's a good TV show on tonight. Wentworth Woodhouse in South Yorkshire was once one of the grandest and most important stately homes in England, but it started to fade into rack and ruin, as many did. A preservation trust stepped in to save it for the local community. So at 7:30 tonight on BBC One, you can watch a documentary called Our Lives, following the army of local volunteers who are doing it up. Two of them, married couple, and you'll find out why that's significant in a moment, are Brasso Dave and classy scrubber Rosemary.
It's just such a beautiful, beautiful house. It's just wonderful being here. I can't imagine being anywhere else.
You've got a lot of memories, haven't you? Because you used to go with your dad. How special is that?
When I was probably 7 or 8, I used to come with my dad. My dad was part of the sea cadets, and he used to bring the young sea cadets onto one of the lakes in the park, teaching them how to row. So I've known it from a very young age.
And what about you, Dave? What's your connection to Wentworth Woodhouse?
Rosemary's talked about it in the past, and we never thought we'd be able to get into the house because it was privately owned. We came down a weekend for a food and gift weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I noticed the stair rods on the main staircase were sliding out, so I went back to the front of the house and told them that I could restore them. So I got the job of restoring them. It was a labour of love. They're all back in now and fully polished and repaired, and just they just look wonderful, and that's how I started here.
And the rest is history, and now it's part of a TV show, which is great. I must explore your nicknames, because Dave, yours is fine, Brasso Dave, which I'm just assuming you polish everything in sight. Is that the case?
I did a lot of brass polishing at one time, and I'm still doing brass polishing. The house is all the door knobs and everything. There's so much stuff that is in brass.
Yeah.
You know, that once the story, and I've only scratched the surface, really.
You don't want to be doing that if you're Brasso in it, Dave.
No. Bad choice of words.
Yeah, exactly. And Rosemary, what's your nickname? You can say it, not me.
I'm a classy scrubber.
Yes. Which means what? Do you prepare the way for Dave to Brasso? What's your job involved, being a classy scrubber?
Dusting, sweeping, polishing. Yeah, anything. I said originally anybody can be a scrubber, but we are classy because we're working in this beautiful building. That name stuck for all of us.
What are we going to see you doing on the telly then, you two? Just pass me that rag. Get up that ladder. Is it all that kind of stuff, or what are we going to see?
Yeah, going around with my feather duster and sweeping brush. It's good fun, and it's lovely that they're doing this programme and bringing this house back to life. We keep saying this isn't about David and myself, it's about the house.
We're doing it because we love the house.
Yeah.
And we actually do love the house.
Mm-hmm.
We want it to be back to its former glory, and this is why we're doing it.
Do you ever have a moment when you both fantasise it's yours and, you know, maybe you answer the door to the milkman and say, 2 pints today?
It would be nice.
It would be nice.
Yeah.
The amount of time David spends down here, he practically lives here anyway. He's here 6 days a week. He insisted on having a day off to take me shopping, and even that, he'd rather be down here.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I don't want to cause a row, but does he ever do any brassoing at your place, Rosemary? I mean, he's doing all his brassoing elsewhere.
No, I haven't got any brass anyway, but
all right.
Even if I had, it wouldn't get done, because none of the jobs at home get done. Wentworth comes first every time.
At least
it's his first love.
At least he's looking a bit shamefaced when you've said that. Dave, are you neglecting the marital home?
Yeah.
Yes. This seems to take priority. It's a wonderful place to be. I don't do not just polishing. I make, out of the original slate and wood off the roof, I make clocks. We turn them into clocks. If you buy a clock or you buy a cup of tea light or you buy a door wedge, you've got original 300-year-old wood because we had the roof replaced.
Right.
And so we don't throw away anything. We recycle everything.
Listen, it's great that you both are so invested. Can't wait to watch the show. Thank you so much for sharing Wentworth Woodhouse with us. People need to Google it and have a look. It's absolutely extraordinary.
They'll be amazed when they see it.
They will.
Come and visit us. It's a beautiful place. It's not a little tiny house.
It's twice as long as Buckingham Palace.
Well, there you go. And it took the royal family a long time to brasso that.
It did, yes. Definitely.
And there we go. So that was Brasso Dave.
Oh, imagine the royal family brassoing.
I know. Well, Rosemary and Dave, then, they hardly get home. They're too busy brassoing the Wentworth Woodhouse in South York. So look, that was down there on telly tonight. Good news, Jeanette.
Yes.
From Who Zoo. Have you seen it?
Yes, I saw.
The capybara, Cinnamon the capybara's back home.
Dave got her.
She was swimming.
Because she was like kind of roaming, wasn't she? They left her for a few days. Yeah. And now she's back to the zoo.
She went for a dip and they fished her out in a humane way. And the capybara's back home. So that's good. Well done to Brasso Dave and Classic Rubber Rosemary. We were talking earlier on, we haven't had a lot of time to talk about all the text today, but if you've had a nickname handed to you because of your hobby, we will include you in the register with Brasso Dave a little bit later in the programme. So if you want to text us, 85058.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Drive.
It is 5 Live Drive with Tony Livesey and Jeanette Kwachi, and these are your headlines at 6 o'clock. More than 100 women have now contacted lawyers accusing Mohammed Al-Fayed of sexual assault. The former Harrods owner has been described as a monster and a predator by lawyers representing some of them. One of them is Gloria Allred. She told Drive, Harrods must pay up.
We think it's important that there be as much justice as possible for the victims, and that would include financial compensation to them by Harrods, because many of them have bills that they've had to pay, and many of them suffered lost wages when they resisted the sexual advances of Mohammed Al-Fayed, because then he retaliated against them by terminating them.
Harrods insists the company is very different now and a process is available to women who say they were attacked by Mr. Al-Fayed. He also owned Fulham Football Club between 1997 and 2013. It's investigating whether any women were abused there. 12 people have been killed and dozens injured in an Israeli strike on the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Israel says it killed Hezbollah's operations commander along with other senior members of the group. Sara Rammel is a content creator who had to leave her home in southern Lebanon.
On the days I was in Beirut alone, I used to check the news every 5 minutes just to see if my family's names will be on some news platform that they were martyred or something. It was really, really bad. Right now, I prefer to just stay with my parents if the war escalates here, just so I would know for sure that they are safe.
Downing Street has confirmed that Keir Starmer, Angela Rayner and Rachel Reeves won't accept any donations for clothing in the future. It follows criticism of the Prime Minister after he accepted clothes from the Labour peer, Lord Ali. Nigel Farage has told the Reform UK Party conference that it has no room for bigots or extremists. He says he wants to make it more professional following controversy over the selection of some of its election candidates. Our political correspondent Hannah Miller has more.
Essentially, the argument is that if you want to be winning seats in Parliament and really winning power, then you need to have a ground game. You need to have campaigners in constituencies, constituency organisations from the bottom up.
People with peanut allergies are being